Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we continue to look at the work of Wilhelm Reich and how his research has been advanced and applied. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's one. Agenda 21 propaganda invades hotels, lectures travelers. And the subtitle is, United Nations plans to bankrupt developed world with carbon taxes while controlling our lives with, quote, green policies. As a frequent traveler, I've repeatedly been bombarded by mindless propaganda at hotels across the U.S. lecturing about the use of towels in relation to saving the environment. Apart from a few hotels in actual desert regions devoid of water, this is mostly just a public relations stunt to promote a green agenda with little, if any, tangible results and plenty of implied guilt to do one's part. This is the first time, however, that I've seen one overtly linked with the UN Agenda 21 program, which countless critics have exposed as a plan to stifle development and saddle nations with debt paid directly to the bankers in the name of saving planet Earth. Author Rosa Corey rightly calls it a green mask to conceal a far more insidious agenda for total control under UN auspices. Now, listeners might remember that Rosa Corey wrote the book Behind the Green Mask. One of the examples in this story is, my rental car, like all the others, must display a round green decal proving that a carbon tax was paid in order to drive in restricted, aka green zones, as they were termed by the government. Environmentally sensitive roadways are marked by signs as one enters the downtown areas. Those without the sticker can be fined if stopped in unauthorized areas. The song and video released from reggae star Skull had prompted a lot of people to look at the chemtrail geoengineering programs. Now, this is one of the people involved in producing this song is Morgan Carey. He's the brother of Mariah Carey. He's an activist, music manager, and helped launch the career of reggae artist Skull. Interestingly, Skull was the first Korean artist to break to the top three on the Billboard R&B single sales. It also is in the documentary that's coming out titled Why in the World Are They Spraying by Michael Murphy. We continue to look into the work of Wilhelm Reich with Dr. James DeMeo. Dr. DeMeo is one of the top researchers who has utilized and applied Reich's work in many ways. He studied Earth, Atmospheric, and Environmental Social Sciences at Florida International University and the University of Kansas. He also studied graduate-level scientific research that focused on Wilhelm Reich's controversial discoveries. Dr. DeMeo has built orgone energy accumulators, cloud busters, and much more. He was editor of On Wilhelm Reich and Orgonomy and Heretic's Notebook, plus editor of the journal Pulse of the Planet. We'll also talk about utilizing Reich's methods to end drought, diminish wildfires, and make deserts green. Dr. DeMeo, welcome to Another News.
Thank you for the invitation.
Well, we are continuing our look at Wilhelm Reich's work, and you have been advancing his material and putting it to an application. And I wanted to start just by asking you your understanding of Wilhelm Reich's concept of orgone and life energy.
Yes, well, I consider it to be more than a concept, as it's really a proven phenomenon now. The word just hasn't gotten out. The orgone accumulator is a really fascinating device. Some people compare it to a Faraday cage. I like to compare it to a hollow capacitor. If you know about capacitors that are used in electronics, they build up a charge inside themselves, and they can hold on to a charge. And they're made basically of layerings of insulators and metals, which is at a basic principle of the orgone accumulator construction. It's made from layers of ferromagnetic material and dielectric materials. It builds up a charge inside itself, and you can feel it. Under the right conditions, you can see it. You can measure it with different techniques. It's a real bona fide phenomenon that Reich discovered, Dr. Wilhelm Reich. It has physical effects upon the air, upon moisture, upon electrical parameters within the space inside the orgone accumulator. And it also has biological effects. And this is, biological effects are really quite amazing. I did a multi-year study of seed sprouting inside the orgone accumulator using mung beans, much like what you'd find in restaurants. We're able to show a systematic 35% increase in the growth of seedlings sprouted in an open glass dish of water inside the orgone accumulator, as compared to controls under identical conditions in all other respects.
How did you do that with no sunlight?
The problem is you have to control against all the various factors. So I did it inside darkened enclosures. That way, ruling out all the sun, all of the light, you control that factor. And for a sprouting seed, that's not an unusual thing, as in nature, they're coming up out of the dark ground in any case. That was a very significant experiment. The statistical coefficient was something like 0.0001, I believe. Not something expected to happen randomly or by chance. And one example
exactly
of what the orgone accumulator can do.
You're right. And did you build an orgone energy accumulator?
I've built several of them, many of them. Actually, I have a book on the subject called The Orgone Accumulator Handbook, which gives background information and how to use them and how to build them, something that anybody can build using fairly simple materials from a hardware store, galvanized sheet metal plate, which you can get from most sheet metal shops, and steel wool, good quality fluffy wool felt you get from a fabric store, or you can use fiberglass insulation. Both of those materials have a good dielectric quality to them. And that simply means that they have the capacity to build up an electrostatic charge. You know, like when you're walking on the rug and you touch the doorknob, you get a spark. The orgone accumulator has the capacity to sort of build up that phenomenon all by itself, but without friction.
I understand. Okay, so you've built several of these. You try them out, and other people do, and what are the effects that you experience?
Well, I got involved in this back in the 1970s, partly to satisfy myself if this was real or if it was some kind of just a crazy idea. And I really, this was when I was just getting into the university, so I focused on this as my university studies. And I'm not a doctor, so I don't treat people for anything, but I know a lot of doctors who use the orgone accumulator to treat different kinds of what Dr. Reich called the low-energy biopathies. These are diseases of low energy and fatigue, such as chronic fatigue syndrome or kind of immune system disorders where there's just an overall weakening of the immune system, or even cancer, which is a low energy biopathy. And people respond quite well to this. Most of the physicians who use the Orgone Energy Accumulator in their medical practices are in Europe because of the problem of the Food and Drug Administration here in the United States. They attack any kind of natural healing method. And, of course, to them, the Orgone Accumulator is the biggest quack nonsense in the world. But it's not quack nonsense. It's a real thing. And these doctors in Europe that I know, the results they get is just really phenomenal. And it's inexpensive. This is the other thing. You don't have to spend enormous amounts of money on pharmacy drugs and the other kinds of things, although they do integrate their practices with conventional medicine to some extent.
Right, that
I
makes
think
sense.
That's wise. But in any case, one of Dr. Reich's associates, Dr. Theodore Wolf, he once declared that the Orgone Accumulator is the most important discovery in the history of medicine, bar none. That's almost a direct quote. I mean, if you think of those mung beans that are sprouting 35% taller and more vigorously mm-hmm. than the control beans, and that's just one experiment, the same kind of life-invigorating quality is imparted to a human being when they sit in the accumulator on a fairly regular basis.
I want to ask you, Dr. DeMeo, can you overdo this?
Yes, you can. You can overcharge yourself, so, you know, a little bit is good, or moderate amount is good, but a whole lot more is not necessarily better. So it's not something you want to sleep in or work inside or live inside a big Orgone accumulator. It's something that a lot of people don't even need it. I mean, if you have high energy people, and if they start sitting in an Orgone accumulator, they feel uncomfortable. It's like too much. And Reich used to say you go with this like you would drinking water. You know, if you are thirsty, you drink water, and then your biological system tells you when you don't need any more, when you've had enough. And it's the same with the Orgone accumulator. When you get inside it and it feels warm and relaxing and expansive, kind of like the feeling I could compare is if you've ever gone walking in any of the great big forests of the western states, like the redwood forests and these huge, huge trees. On a dry day, you go walking in those forests and the trees are radiating an energy. You can feel it. And a lot of people say, wow, and they go lay up against the tree and they feel this powerful energy coming off these huge trees. It's very similar to that. It's very, very similar to that.
Mm-hmm. And the Orgone Energy Accumulator, as our past guest Kevin Hinchey was mentioning in his documentary, was a big breakthrough for Reich. He essentially had observed initially that there was orgone energy in the atmosphere, and this was a way to concentrate it more into a small chamber. But the discovery that it is in the atmosphere is also work that you're connected with as well, in terms of you've also developed the Cloud Buster on your own. Can you tell listeners some of your work with using a Cloud Buster?
Yes. Well, this was another and a later development that Dr. Reich came on. And this is a device that he found was able to change the energetic quality in the atmosphere such that you could go from a droughty or a dry atmospheric condition to a condition that was more pulsatory in the atmosphere, more alive from a life energetic standpoint. And once this was done, the rainfall would tend to naturally build into the area. So you can think of it much like acupuncture, but in the sky, sort of, so to speak. I'm not 100% comfortable with that analogy, but people know acupuncture already, and mm-hmm. the Chinese theory is you're putting these needles in the body at certain places, and then it restores an energy flow that then restores more mechanical part qualities of your blood flow and lymph and so on, such that you get a relief of symptoms and a restoration of pulsation and health in the body. At least that's the theory. So with the Cloudbuster, it's somewhat similar. You've got this antenna, and it's grounded into water, and that's a very essential part of it. And the instrument itself is like an antenna made of hollow tubes, and it can be pointed in different directions in the sky. And when this is done correctly, it creates a change in the atmospheric quality, which you can see and which can be photographed, such that you go from these hazy, stagnant atmosphere, the clouds are minimized or they're just smeared out across the sky, to one where the haziness diminishes and the atmosphere becomes more transparent, where the winds will pick up, and where the clouds go from that smeared, fractured kind of look to something that's much more cohesive and bunched together. The cohesive quality of clouds is something that is not talked about too much in meteorology, although it's an essential part of rainfall mechanisms, mm-hmm. is not really understood. When I was studying meteorology in the university, they used to say that the clouds that give good rain have a skin around them to hold them together against the forces of mixing and entrainment that want to tear them apart, kind of like a negatively entropic quality. They would talk about some days have a good skin effect and the clouds will grow really, really well. Well, clouds don't have a skin around them, but there's clearly something going on. And on some days, the clouds are disintegrating as fast as they're building up and you don't get any real development. And on other days, the clouds are dynamic and growing. And at any rate, the Cloudbuster is a device that works at the energetic level, the pre-atomic level, before matter exists, and it's something that can affect, in some way that we still are unclear about, it can affect the dynamics of the growth of water droplets in the atmosphere, which is essential for clouds and rainfall.
Some of your past work, you've been involved with restoring rain to particular areas, and can you tell listeners a little bit about that work?
Yes. My first work with this was at the University of Kansas, and I did a systematic study there while I was a graduate student, which got accepted. We demonstrated that when we used this device in the state of Kansas, there were systematic changes in rainfall and a number of other atmospheric parameters over the whole state. So firstly, this is a device that can have an influence over fairly wide areas. Now, since then, I did a number of major experiments, one which I attempted to coordinate through with the National Weather Service in Arizona on five pre-announced dates, and went out to Arizona, did this work, and looked at the rainfall over the whole state of Arizona, Southern California, and Southern Nevada, and was able to demonstrate a doubling effect of the rainfall quantities in that area for a full week after these operations were performed. So there was an immense reaction, clearing of the atmosphere, nice rains happening all over the place, and I tried to get that the results of that particular study published. That was back in 1989, and nobody would publish it because it was just so outrageous from the classical viewpoint of thinking. So we wound up privately publishing the study, and that attracted attention, and I was invited to do a project in Israel where they had a three-year drought going on with extremely severe conditions with zero. They were right down to the red line on their main reservoir, really, really needed more water, and there was saber-rattling by all the different countries over water resources. So I went there, and I did this experiment, put in about 2 weeks of work there, and within about a week afterwards, they started getting rainfall pulses coming in off the Mediterranean. Turned out that rainy season broke all their records going back more than 100 years. They wound up with snow on the mountains in places where they had never seen it before, such as down the mountains near Eilat in the southern part of their country. Massive amounts of wildflowers growing out in the open desert. I mean, it was an amazing transformation. And I thought, well, now there's going to be some international recognition on this, a breakthrough, and certainly it's a big verification for Wilhelm Reich.
Right.
But One of the meteorologists said, well, this was the result of Mount Pinatubo erupting on the other side of the world 6 months earlier. You know, there was no other desert place in the world that had got that kind of rain
exactly.
from Mount Pinatubo. So anyway, that wasn't accepted from the classical people. They reacted very much like, I guess, a doctor working at the National Institute of Health would if you told him about people disintegrating a cancer tumor using vitamin C or the organ accumulator or something. They were just against it reflexively, and no amount of data would, they were not interested to even look at your data.
I think this is fascinating and extremely important work to continue to raise the profile of. And to point out, you're not chemically altering the atmosphere. These are natural, you're stimulating a natural ether energy in the atmosphere.
Yes. There's no chemicals at all, as you say. This is an antenna, which, I mean, you could think of it like a lightning rod or a series of lightning rods, in that it's got a stronger ground to the Earth, and it's an antenna, and that's it. I mean, there's no electricity provided to it other than the motors you may need to move the big antenna and that sort of thing. But there's no electrical field, there's no electromagnetic impulse added to it, and it's the only way you can understand it is much like if you think of the telescope, must function by virtue of light. And the light is out there, and the telescope works because you got the right lenses and the right focal length, and the light moves through it. Well, the Cloudbuster is similar, except that there's no classical concept of light that's accepted. We once had the older idea of the ether of space, which gets close to the orgone energy of Reich. So you got these tubes in it, and this energy moves through it, and it creates a powerful effect.
The news is out on a pretty massive drought in the Midwest, and I wanted to ask you if you were tasked with generating rainfall to help agriculture right now over the Midwest, what would you do?
Well, it's this has always been a problem. People ring us up. We've had a few farmers, but it's not cheap to do. I've got for us to go out and work in the Midwest. We've got to trailer our equipment out there, and it's not a heck of a lot of expense, but it's more than I can dig out of my pocket. So,
let's say that money wasn't an issue.
Well, if money wasn't an issue, we would have been on this already, because it could be done. I mean, I did my work, my original field work on this, like I said, at the University of Kansas, and so it's a matter of just getting the equipment to the right places. You can't just do it anywhere. It has to be done at certain specific points, and then setting up the equipment, and usually within about 48 hours to a week of working in different areas, you get a breakthrough of some kind or another. That's my experience now, at least.
That's really important to know, because I mean, you've done other work in much much worse conditions, drought-stricken areas and in the desert.
Yes, we actually worked. I had a 5-year project with the government of Eritrea for a while. We worked at the southeastern edge of the Sahara Desert in the Horn of Africa region. It worked there as well, and we had a very good result. The problem with them was that the country went Stalinist, and they went to war with a neighboring country, Ethiopia, and at that point I pulled out my team. I said this because it was just too dangerous. The Ethiopian jets were flying overhead bombing stuff, and here we are out there with a device that actually looks from the air. It would look like a cannon or something, you know, so... it was too dangerous, and we just ended the project at that point. But we got very, very good results, and the results I call the unbelievable result, because there were these brand new lakes formed out in the open Sahara Desert from all the rain. You can still go to Google Earth and find them. They're kind of west of Aswan, overflow lakes from the Nile River. That was the first time in the history of the Aswan Dam that they actually got more water in it than what they needed, so they just dumped the excess water over out into the open Sahara. And I mean, that's the Reich's work is It is Galilean in nature in terms of the social and scientific breakthrough. That's, I know most people are going to raise eyebrows to hear that, but that's been my experience working this for about 40 years now, and it is the science of the 21st century, hopefully the 21st century. If not, then it'll be the 22nd century. But it's real, and it's powerful, and it works.
And sometimes it seems like that's a big problem for the U.S. government, and we talked about this briefly in terms of what's going on around us, not only the U.S. government, but even in Canada, where the government is clamping down on people who are putting gardens in their yards, selling raw milk, things like that.
Yeah.
Can you make the connection here to Reich's work and what we're seeing?
Well, you've hit on a really important issue, is that the big obstacle in the way is not the application of the technology. The problem is the oppositional forces in government agencies and in the academic world and in the medical world. Reich called this the emotional plague of mankind, that character structure is a real issue. You have some people who live their life to be generous and increase the abundance of their family and their neighborhood, and they're generous and they're hopeful and optimistic and they work hard and they do things and get much accomplished. But there are other people who look, their whole life is dedicated to squashing things down, to stopping things, to attacking other people. And those kind of individuals, characterologically, they somehow wind up in the top positions of government or institutional authority. And then they just flick people around and knock them down if they start to try to do anything that's unorthodox. In the sciences, we have jokes about this. We say that an expert in his field is somebody who's held up progress for the greatest amount of time. Or we say that Max Planck once said that science progresses funeral by funeral. And that's true. It really is true. I was a professor at several American universities for about 10 years, and I found that when I would have really good success and present some data that really showed this stuff worked with the orgone accumulator, with the Cloudbuster, that's when I really had to watch my back, because if it's only theoretical, nobody cares. But if it really works, look at how many bibliographies you've just destroyed. So there's all these edifices out there that people guard with deadly force. And so I eventually quit the universities because it was really impossible to advance and do anything there. So I have a private institute now on the West Coast, and we publish books and offer seminars and try to bring this information out into the public, to the younger people, because that's where the hope is that the next generation is going to do things better than my generation did. I thought my generation would break through, you know, the hippie generation and the 60s radicals.
Can you tell listeners a little bit more about your institute and how they can reach you?
We're on the West Coast. It's called the Orgone Biophysical Research Lab in Ashland, Oregon. We have a major website called orgonelab.org, orgonelab.org. They can look that up and get all kinds of info. My books are on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Just look up my name, James DeMeo, DeMeo. They should find what we've been publishing on this stuff for the last, not for 40 years publishing, but at any rate, there's quite a lot of stuff that's out there. And I also always like to caution people, beware of what you read on Internet. Most of it is crazy stuff or junk or people that are attacking Reich with profound ignorance or maliciousness.
Right, right. I really appreciate you clearing that up. We're at the bottom of the hour. Dr. James DeMeo, we're going to open the lines and take calls. If you have a comment or a question about this interview, give us a call at 212-209-2900, and we'll be right back after this break. Thank you. You're listening to In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Our guest is Dr. James DeMeo, and we are discussing his work and research on orgone energy cloudbusters and orgone energy accumulators. Remember, orgonelab.org is where you can see some of Dr. DeMeo's work, and he also runs the Orgone Biophysical Research Lab in Ashland, Oregon. We're going to go to the first phone call. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. DeMeo.
I have a question for the doctor or two. The first one is, I saw a device, and I'd like to get his feedback on it, a couple of years ago that had glass tubes, and it was said that it had orgone gas or something like that in it. It's like similar to those balls where you touch them, and it has a pink light. It comes to your fingertips. Does that transmit any of this orgone energy that he's talking about? I know it creates ozone when you put your skin next to it, and it makes that charge. Is he familiar with anything like that?
Dr. DeMeo?
Yeah, I think you're talking about some kind of a vacuum tube device that has high-frequency electromagnetic current applied to it. Maybe something from Royal Rife, R-I-F-E, who's a different guy. I really can't give you an opinion on that because I've seen those devices and I've played with them. It may be they do something, but I couldn't say if it's orgone energy. There's nothing directly I could connect it with, but they do have an excitation that is sometimes you could feel better from that, but mostly I find they kind of irritate me, so I don't use anything like that.
Right. I have another question.
Go ahead, Antonio.
Oh, okay. Is he familiar with the work of Dr. Judy Wood and what she is saying down at the Twin Towers, possibly using some sort of this type of energy to create or add to the chaos that happened down there? I'll listen off the air. Thanks, Jeff.
All right. Thanks, Antonio. I'm not certain.
I'm drawing a blank, actually. I don't know anything about this person.
Okay, Dr. Judy Wood, she wrote a fantastic book titled Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. You know, we'll just focus in on the ether energy right now and orgonomy. We're going to go
That's what I know. I wasn't there on 9/11, so I can't, that's all I can say.
Okay, I understand. Go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, I just have a question for Dr. DeMeo. You know, you mentioned before that you hesitated to draw the analogy with the Asian medicine practices of acupuncture, et cetera, but as a person who has consumed this kind of medicine for now 25 years for the Japanese doctor I go to, I could say with almost certainty that this is a related type of concept to what they do in exerting the shiatsu or the acupuncture energy, because the chi is the concept there. I'm sure you're familiar with that. And the reason I bring this up is because the directed and the proportional energy from the doctor to the patient and vice versa is a circular, it's basically a completion of a circuit between them, and it's felt to be adequate because the person says to the doctor, that's too much or that's enough or whatever it is in that spot, to reach each organ to the meridians that are placed around the body from the tops of the head to the bottom of the feet.
I'm confused. Did I say something against acupuncture? I misspoke.
I would never say anything. You were saying that you hesitated to draw the analogy between the orgone and the this type of energy, but what I would say is that it seems to me directly similar. In fact, maybe some of the biggest supporters of people that you might find for this type of the use of this type of energy would be them.
Yeah, I must disagree with myself and agree with you. I don't know what I was saying. In fact, I'm just writing up a paper in the last couple of days where I'm citing several studies on what they call orgone acupuncture by several trained acupuncture physicians and scientists
mm-hmm.
They make hollow tubes very small hollow tubes, like an orgone accumulator with wrappings like a cylinder, and they hold them over acupuncture points, and they get very similar results to an acupuncture needle.
Wow.
And so this is, I think that the key energy of the Chinese and the prana of the Indian culture is, it's life energy. We you find that there's all kinds of terms used for life energy around the planet by
yes.
different cultures. And I think it's all there. People are sensing and feeling the same thing, giving it different words. You know, the difference is with Reich is he made it directly usable for the ordinary person, and that was a big step forward. Previously, I was talking about the atmospheric cloud-busting device of Reich, which we could compare it roughly to atmospheric acupuncture, but that really doesn't get to it quite so clearly.
I think that's
clearly.
What you were hesitating to say. Yes,
yes, yes.
That's right.
But in the biological context, I think that's very agreeable.
Yes, thank you so much for saying so, because it's just exciting to me to see that if there's this much universality to these concepts, then they have to prove out in all different environments.
Well, let's hope so. All we got to do is get the opposition to let us alone for a while.
I wouldn't even worry about them. Just go around them like they do in shiatsu.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Thank you, caller. Wonderful point you brought up. We're going to go to the next call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, James. Brandon here.
Hey, Brandon.
Good deal. James, I'm a geophysicist, studied in Colorado. I remember the drop sounds that they used to get out of Bureau of Standards to affect the atmospherics and change the strikes of the lightning from ground up.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you wouldn't agree with me that perhaps what mediates here is really hydrogen bond van der Waals effects, possibly the 22 hertz to 22 megahertz resonance between the human intentionality brain interaction with the 22 megahertz millionth harmonic of water resonance. In other words, James, in the capsule, are we not just talking about, when you say there's no electromagnetic standard propagation here, we should be possibly looking at van der Waals, hydrogen bond, and the human atmospheric interaction through water and the like?
Well, that's an interesting point. I guess for a more precise scientific discussion, I should say we haven't actually detected any such frequencies. But neither do I know of anybody who's gone out in the field with the kind of elaborated equipment that would be necessary to do that. There is some evidence in what's called the field of spheric frequencies, which are within that band that you mentioned, something between like 500 and 50,000 cycles. The spheric frequencies are naturally given off by clouds, by forests, by humans or any other living kind of thing, or water. And there's actually been some work in Germany I know of to use the spheric frequencies like a radar, where like a passive detection of them in a triangulated way to make weather maps. Much like you see a radar weather map, they can make these spheric maps, which can actually plot the intensity of storms. For a while back in the 1950s in the United States, there was all kinds of interest in sphericks as tornado prediction, for severe storm prediction and forecasting, and they found they were very good at severe storm forecasting. For instance, they're called thunderstorm whistlers. If you ever ran with a CB radio when you're out in the Midwest and there's a big thunderstorm, you'll hear these clicks and whistles.
Yeah, sure.
And that's the spheric frequencies.
May I ask you, though, particularly about looking into, with your group, electromagnetism drops off 1 over R squared. I think the van der Waals force is 1 over R to the eighth, so that your local effect would be very much limited by the, you know, say, effects dropping off so rapidly. So that, do you feel that the orgone energies and the means of propagation are reflecting any of these relationships that might help you in proving it in the field? I'll listen off the phone.
Okay. I have to say, I still remain skeptical that orgone energy is any kind of electromagnetism. I believe it is the medium through which electromagnetism is transmitted in the sense of the old theory of the cosmic ether of space. So when I think of orgone energy, I think of the medium, like the ocean that in which we are like fish and we're moving through it. And the electromagnetic waves are like waves on the ocean, and they can move through it like sound waves can move through the ocean water, but they're not the water itself. And the condition of the water, it can be ice, it can be liquid, it can be steam. In a certain fashion, the orgone energy has different states of excitation, and this can affect the transmission or the relationship to electromagnetic frequencies. So, there's a lot of interesting stuff in that, but very little empirical research has been done on it. And Reich was doing some research in these directions around the time when he had his problems with the FDA, and I think a few other people have done a few things, but the problem is getting into the universities where you can get access to research grants and equipment where you can really do a top-notch job on this sort of thing to clear up the ambiguities.
Well, Dr. DeMeo, thank you for describing it in that way. It really illustrates it very nicely. We're going to go to the next call. Hi, you're on the air.
Is that me?
Yes, caller.
Yes, I had a couple questions and then one based on something that you said. First of all, this would probably be a short answer. Did the cloud-busting assemblages involve the use of radium?
Well, Reich was experimenting with radioactive materials in the last part of his life, and he found a few things that he felt were of interest with respect to the cloudbuster, but that's all. It would be too lengthy to elaborate further.
But he did in some of his cloud busting experiments, such as north of Tucson and wherever else, was radium involved in some cases?
Well, it was a special kind of radium that he had developed. He felt that he had affected it with the orgone energy. But the short answer is yes.
Okay, my second question is, when you describe cloudbusters functioning as or similar to antennas, do you think that projects such as HARP or other electromagnetic antenna arrays are utilizing that capability?
I have no clarity about HARP. But I do feel that Tesla was onto certain things that, at least from a theoretical standpoint, could have an influence upon weather. I just find that there's too much speculation for me to really get into that in a believing way. And I really don't know too much about this HARP project other than I read stuff and I don't know what to believe about it. I think there's probably the truth lies somewhere in between the conspiracy theories and the actual declarations about what it is.
Well, based on your research, would you say that large antenna arrays and directed energy utilizing antennas, if that's the best word, could in fact be used to alter the weather?
Well, I can't really say. All I know is I've worked with Wilhelm Reich's approach, and it works. About these other things, it's just all theoretical, as far as I can tell. I mean, there's a lot of claims. I really don't know what to believe about it.
It's really not the forte of Dr. DeMeo's work at this moment. He's really focusing in on the natural ether energy and influencing.
May I ask one third question?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, and this is something that you, Dr. DeMeo, you mentioned that if you had the money, resources, you'd all be up in the Midwest dealing, with the drought situation?
Well, sure. And, we were set up sort of like the Cloudbuster Fire Department for a while there. All we needed was, the financing to set up a situation where we would go to a lot of places. And actually, I did. In the 1990s, 80s and 90s, I was traveling all over in the United States and other places in the world, and we did get some some funding for a few of the projects, especially the overseas ones, where we really couldn't do anything without funding. But it's really become much more difficult for a variety of reasons. And I'm 63 years old now, so I'm not the young 30-year-old guy who would jump in his truck, tank full of gas, and go help somebody with a drought.
I understand that. My specific question, just for clarification, when the host here asked you about that, aside from the money and resources and other variabilities, you said it would have to be done at certain points. And I didn't know if you meant certain points in time or certain geographical points.
Geographical. But it's also timing, too. It's a little bit of everything.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The other thing is Dr. DeMeo trains people on how to use CloudBusters, build them, and also he has written a book called The Oregon Accumulator Handbook, which shows you also how to build one of those yourself. You're on the air. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi. Dr. DeMeo, I don't mean any disrespect. I'm wondering if, given Israeli government's handling and what they do in Gaza, would you think twice about assisting them at all with any problem they had, given that could this technology be used against those people in Gaza that are already suffering so much?
I'm not going to get involved in a political discussion, but this technology is a double-edged sword. It can be used for good or it can be used for ill. It's a Pandora's box that opened up. Reich at one point thought it should be kept with a top secret designation because of the problems, and he lost control of it when they threw him in prison. You know, what could he do? I have thoughts about this, but I'm not prepared to really go into it in a radio program. But it's a sad situation that we face. I mean, it's a technology that can do wonderful things, and I hope that's the way it develops over the years. But I have no guarantee about that.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you, caller, for those questions. And the caller before that, thank you for those questions. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Go ahead, caller.
Yes. I'm wondering, where is the stand on the community of concerned scientists? Where do they take part? And if this was done for, you said it could be done for bad or good, but how strong and how effective can they be to say, well, for instance, when the caller asked about the droughts in the Midwest, if this is so beneficial, is it hard to implement it for good? Concerned scientists say, well, we should put this to use. How hard is that to do?
You know, technologically, it's not hard. The difficulty is the social problem. I'll give you an example. WeatherWise magazine, which is a big magazine, it's read by meteorologists all around the world, they recently ran an article on Reich and the Cloudbuster, which made a mess of everything. And they didn't cite any of the published positive evidence. They just made it sound like a quackery kind of thing. I wrote to the editor and I said, well, look, you got to correct this. Let's have a follow-up, a letter to the editor. I wrote him one, mentioned these citations of published work. They refused, absolutely refused. In the last week, Nature magazine, the biggest scientific publication in the world, carried an article by some art journalist where they slandered Wilhelm Reich, horribly slandered him. Now, they would no scientist is going to put their name to that, but they bring these other people in, these irresponsible journalists who just unload their hatred on Reich. Now, with that kind of thing, I go to the governor of Arizona, as I did a couple of years ago when they had wildfires all over the place. I sent them all kinds of publications and research documentation saying, look, bring me there. I'll trailer my equipment. All you got to do is give me a permission and give a little bit of a logistical help. I was willing to pay for it out of my own pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got an answer. And I've got a stack of files like that from, you know, going back many years, where we knock on the door, we try to open a conversation with people that are in a position to open the doors for us to do something, And you're lucky if you get a thank you very much, but we're not interested. Most of the time it's silence.
Oh.
And in one case, when the city of Santa Barbara, California, was suffering from multi-year drought and their reservoirs were down at the bottom, we offered to bring it there on our own money, make a demonstration project, and got no answer back except that the Santa Barbara Press-Democrat, their big newspaper, the next day had this ridicule article about some crazy guy named DeMeo who was going to come there with a Reich cloud blaster, and, you know, they just made a ridicule mess smearing Dr. Reich. And now that's been going on now for 50 years since Dr. Reich died in a prison in Lewisburg Federal Penitentiary for daring to stand up to the courts and saying that his work was valid and he should have the right to speak about it and write about it. And they burned his books, too.
Oh, dear. So, that sounds so like dark ages.
it is. It's medieval. And if you look at modern science, my God, how many medieval concepts are going on because the more functional research directions are having the doors shut in their face.
Yeah,
so
I would think that the public itself, I'm sure there's communities that are suffering from this drought, and I would think that the knowledge is power, and it would have an effect to cause uprising, but maybe if it's suppressed, it's just putting the public to sleep. I don't know. I can understand it, really.
Caller, thank you very much for those questions, and we're going to try to get in another call. You made me think of the fact that a lot of these markets profit when there's a drought also. Okay, we're going to go to the next call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead, caller.
Thanks. When Reich died, the Defense Department took all of his material on DOR and apparently sequestered it. Now, that was...
Well, I think that I've not heard that. I'm pretty aware of Dr. Reich's biography, and there's nothing that we know about. The only thing that is he was working on a manuscript when he was in prison, a new book, and when he died, this manuscript could not be found. And I think that's, other than the book burning, I mean, it's kind of crazy, like, you know...
Yeah.
But I don't think the Department of Defense took anything from Reich. It was the Food and Drug people that took his books and burned them, but, yeah.
There was material on deadly orgone radiation that has not been made public.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what deadly orgone radiation is?
I surely know
what
it is.
He does about the incident itself, caller. We have 30 seconds. If you could just give us a quick summarization of what you're talking about.
Okay, William Burroughs in The Job, who also made a study of Wilhelm Reich, says that the Defense Department held on to material on deadly orgone radiation, which involves putting radioactive material in an orgone accumulator. And
well, you're confusing a lot of different things. Reich did an experiment called the Oranur experiment, which was attempting to see what they could do to work against radiation sickness. And this created problems in his laboratory because the radioactive material irritated the atmospheric orgone energy and made it a very deadly situation. Now, there's another issue where Reich was in communication with the U.S. Air Force trying to present some of his data and findings to them, thinking that they might be interested. So he voluntarily gave a lot of information to the Air Force. But that's a separate thing from the Oranur expedition.
Dr. DeMeo, we're running out of time. We got to run. I want to thank you so much for being on the show and imparting a lot of your information and knowledge about your research on Wilhelm Reich's work. It's really just a pleasure to have you on.
I thank you.
Thank you very much. If you want to reach Dr. James DeMeo, you can visit his wonderful website, orgonelab.org. That's orgonelab. All one word, .org. Dr. DeMeo, thank you very much. And that's going to do it for another news. See you Monday, 10 p.m.
On Wednesday, August 29th, starting at 6 p.m. at 120 Wall Street, The WBAI Community Advisory Board will be holding a meeting to discuss what is to be done.